Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 91 of season 11 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Layton Hughes of the We Happy Few 506 podcast. Welcome back to the show, Layton.
Hey, Rob. Great to be back.
Yes. We had a great conversation on Friday, and today things are going to start heating up even more. So episode 91 begins with Lipton continuing to narrate what's going on, and ends with Dyke giving a dangerous order. So we left things off yesterday with basically Malarkey saying goodbye to Buck as he was leaving. And, you know, now the shot changes and we see the men walking through the forest. And we get a narration once again from Lipton. And the thing that I noticed first when you're looking through this is that you see that there is a rifle that is just hanging on a tree. It's a very interesting place to hang your rifle. You know, I don't know about
it's
you.
It's not a bad thing. I think it's quite, because they always say, you know, don't put it on the ground. That you always have to carry your rifle. You know, it's sacrilege to just put your rifle down, because you know, I think it gets dirty. There's a good, you know, chance that you put the rifle on the ground that something's going to get in there and clog the weapon.
Yes, you know, I completely agree with that, but I'm just looking at it from the perspective that, you know, you don't see the, you know, anyone around it. You know, that's
actually a good show. Yeah, that's a good point. That is, yeah. You know, it's an interesting thing, maybe
a guy just needed to relieve himself or something like that and decided to put that there. It is possible. It's just a strange thing, you know, for being a former soldier myself. You know, it's just a very strange place to leave your gun. I completely agree with what you said. That makes perfect sense that you don't want to put it on the ground, but still, it's just a little.
Yeah. Sorry, I've never noticed that before.
Yeah. Well, that's why we do it this way. You know. So Lipton continues with his narration. He goes, the barrages of January 3rd and the shelling on January 9th marked the low point in the war for many of the men in E Company. Even then, very few actually broke. And then, we see Lipton basically smiling as he's walking through the men and, you know, tries to theoretically, I guess you could say, console somebody, you know, who might look a little down in the dumps here. And then, he says, but I know the terror of their shellings and the unrelenting pressure we've been under since we got to Bastogne could take their toll. In other ways, I was afraid the men would lose focus, suffer a drop in morale, and that was dangerous, especially in combat. More of which lay in store for us. And then, we see Lipton show up near the guys, and he goes, Percante, and hey. And then we continue again with the narration, and he goes, we'd clear the woods east and west of Foy. Now it was time for the inevitable assault on Foy itself. Frankly, I was dreading it. I always knew that the E Company men who trained at Tekoa wouldn't get through the war unscathed. But now I was beginning to wonder if any of us were going to make it through at all. So again, it's a great way for them to show us, you know, how dangerous all of this is. And, you know, the way that even someone like Lipton could be scared as to, you know, Is there any way of getting out of this alive, I guess you could say? You know, that type of thing.
No, absolutely. It's ramping up, isn't it? I think he's seeing a lot of the guys break, from the guys he trained with Tekoa. You know, I think our company is about 150-ish people. And I think, I know other people more knowledgeable than me then we'll be able to give you the actual numbers, but I think it's like over 450 people are actually members of Easy Company,
right?
You know, 506. during World War II. And obviously, you can imagine, if you've been there from day 00, to the end, I don't think even, Lipton obviously took his commission, he went on, but he'd have seen a lot of change in that time, a lot of people he trained with. I mean, when you're training, I suppose, yes, you are going to potentially lose people, like the Dietrich, in England, but through training, incidents or accidents, sorry. But in combat, it's just you've seen your friends die on a daily basis or get injured or killed on a daily basis. And yeah, it'll take its toll. So he's done well to sort of keep that state of mind. Because you need a rock, don't you? Because if they, and I think he's in a leadership position. And I think it's quite easy. Like he has seen Buck snap, although Buck wasn't a Tekoa original, but he still came in and
Right.
he fitted in quite nicely with his style of leadership. But if people like Buck are breaking, people are going to look who's going to break next, kind of thing. And if they see you breaking, then that rot, yourself, it could have a massive, like a dominoes effect, you could say. So, it's imagine what he's thinking. Like, I've got to be strong here for these guys. Because if I break, they could break. If they break, they could break. It's all, yeah.
100%. Yeah, it's very, very interesting the way that this all plays out. And then Lipton shows up at a I guess vantage point where Liebgott is, and he goes, "Hey, Lieb." And he takes the binoculars from him in order to check what's going on. Then we continue with the narration, and then he says E Company would lead the attack. The problem was, at least in my estimation, E Companies still did not have a leader. And then we see a whole bunch of people looking out at Foy, and you can see a whole bunch of German soldiers running around, getting into their position, getting ready for because they know that an attack is going to happen also.
It's interesting how he's, still doesn't have a leader, and we talk about battle fatigue. And I think Dyke was possibly portrayed incorrectly. I don't know how what Graham Yost has, has
He
told
told me that
you,
that was he
because
told
I
me that
think
that
he
was
did.
one of his regrets that he didn't use a fictional name because
Yes.
apparently
Yeah.
Dyke's family was not very happy with the way that he was portrayed here for obvious reasons.
The same with Blythe's
Yes.
family, as well. I'm sure
And
this, if you look
Sobel's
at,
family goes there too.
yeah, absolutely. When you look at, that can go, this goes all the way back to the film Zulu with Private Hook, who ended up winning. He won or received, he was awarded, I say won is the wrong word. He was a recipient of the Victoria Cross, and he was a model soldier, teetotal, professional soldier, and he was portrayed as being a malingering drunk, insubordinate, all that good stuff, or bad stuff, sorry. But he won the Victoria Cross, and he covers that at the end of the film Zulu. They didn't have the internet, but the family were there. The family were at the premiere, and they walked out. I suppose in this day and age, certainly the production of Band of Brothers, and I can understand Graham's, why he thinks that as well, because he's said it to myself. It's hard, but you've got to, but if you put a fake name in there, they're still going to know who you're on. People are still going to know who you're
Exactly.
talking about. So why change it, but Dyke's family, he was, sorry, Dyke was, he was a recipient of the, I want to say, Bronze Star or Silver Star, but he did some heroic acts, I want to say in Market Garden, possibly Battle of the Bulge. So yeah, it's a tough one, because again, you're going off, somebody controls that narrative. I'm not going to say who that is, but it's quite obvious, because, and that's no reflection on them. It's just, there's personality clashes, or they've got their way of how their leadership style would be, or what they would do, or what they're seeing is someone who is, again, suffering from battle fatigue or PTSD. It's just they're trying their best to hide it, maybe, just because they are in a position of leadership, of where, up to 150 people are dependent on them. And they, so even though they're probably struggling inside mentally, on a definitely a day-to-day basis, that they've, So they're trying to, I suppose you could say, this is how I'm thinking about it now. They're trying to manage that. And what they're thinking is, I don't know, it's just, so I suppose they're trying to manage it, but and it, but what the guys are seeing, they're seeing a poor leadership. Because I think Dyke was a professional soldier as well. He wasn't, I think he was a career soldier, if I remember rightly.
He was a career soldier, but he also
So
was someone who was,
he.
he for reasons of nepotism, apparently got, was given this position in order to be able to
Advance his
fast track
career.
him up the ladder.
Yeah. So, sort of leading a company, and for him, I again, Joe Mucci would be an excellent, resource for this in terms of knowledge. Whether the heroic acts that he did, but he was part of Easy Company, or whether that was with another unit or another position he was occupying. But yeah, he's thinking my career, but if I show weakness, I suppose in that day and age, that will go against him. So he's, I suppose, doing the best he can in his mental capacity that he has. But yeah, looking back, I think a lot of people said that it's PTSD is battle fatigue, and it actually makes a lot of sense when you, and I suppose it's, but in the show, it's not being portrayed that way, sadly. But again, that's not no fault of Graham. It's just they're going off material, they're going off interviews
Yeah, I mean, it's
with
one of the things
guys, I
that I've
suppose you could
talked about a
say.
lot of times, the
They're going
fact
off the
that,
book.
first of all, the
Yeah.
book itself came out nearly 50 years after the events. And then, doing all the research and the miniseries comes out 50, 56 years or 50, 56 years after all these events. So on the one hand, the question is, are the sources 100% reliable? Because you're basing everything on the memories of men who things happened to 50 something years beforehand. So on the one hand, it's, I mean, I know that Ambrose needed to get corroboration, from various men, but again, it's possible, that things fall through the cracks because of that too.
Yeah, and I don't think everyone was interviewed.
Right. Now,
I
because they
mean,
also
again,
had a questionnaire that they need to fill out or something like that.
yeah, and again, it's down to personality clashes. I think Winters had a big influence on the book. He didn't like Sobel, and Sobel was, as a former soldier yourself, you're being transformed from a civilian to a soldier who can operate, and Sobel, for me, I think he was a very good training officer.
Yes.
Now he may have not have been a very good tactical officer, or but he excelled in supply. He was a service, as a supply officer, Chilton Foyle, again, because of his, excellent record with training with Easy Company in Toccoa, maybe that's why he was selected overall, as well as probably the mutiny action as well. That probably went against him as well. And he probably was a little bit too hard on them, but he drilled them, he got them into the probably best physical shape they've ever been in, and that's why he got put in charge of the jump school at Chilton Foyle.
That's right. And they also say that a lot of the men have said that if Sobel wouldn't have been such an ass to them, it might not have given them, such a strong bond. And so part of the reason that they bonded so well was because they were, I guess, fighting the tide against everything Sobel was doing. But he did get them into perfect physical shape, which probably saved a lot of their lives
Help them.
during the course of the war itself.
I mean, at the time, I mean, they were obviously put together from, again, day 0-0, basic training through the whole infant, training, so they had the same guy. I mean, if it was just basic training, Sobel might have eased up towards a basic training and then handed over to, like what happens with us, when I was in basic training, once, things started easing up and we're getting close to graduation, my instructors, they eased up a little bit. They came a little bit more friendly. But for him, he's getting them ready for combat, and he is with them from the day that, the day they join the army. So for him, he probably thinks he has to be that way constantly to get them into shape because he's preparing. And that's probably what's, like what you said, it's probably what's gone against him, is because he just probably didn't ease up. But then people, I think his interactions with Popeye Wynn, you look at, the episode 4, when, they're at Membury Airfield getting ready for Market Garden, Popeye when he's in the Jeep with Sobo, and it's quite like this nice little, of the, I suppose you could say, the development of Sobel's character, and I think David Schwimmer played him phenomenally. Is that, he's looking stern because they're still trying to give that Sobel impression, and then when they start the conversation between Lip and Popeye Wynn start happening, he's like, "Yeah, hop in." What Sobel said that? Yes, he said, "Hop in." Where you go, and I think that speaks volumes about Sobel, that he's not a training officer anymore. So, he's dealing with guys who are soldiers, who are qualified paratroopers. So he doesn't need to be
Right,
that guy anymore.
but after
So
that scene, there is the whole scene with the motorcycle where he's a little upset they have that Moore and Malarkey
Malarkey,
requisitioned a motorcycle.
yeah. But that's the disciplinarian because he's a captain. Obviously, I think I'm looking at it now because it's us, I'm trying to remember the, what actually happened. But yeah, he's got obviously, I'm telling you off, but I'm not telling you off
Right.
type of thing, do you know what I mean? So it's just like, but it's, I think again, it's sort of, because they probably did steal it, didn't they, on the way back. So
It's in the
they should
book
have been
it's
in
mentioned.
trouble. Yeah. So it's, I think, yeah, it's, so with Dyke, it's, there's the material, go write it. And again, going off what you've just said, then it's interviews with guys 50, 60 years
Correct.
later.
And Dyke wasn't, I don't think Dyke was around to defend himself.
Yeah,
Okay,
exactly.
whatever. What, there's nothing you can do. This is the material that has been given us. There's a limit to how much we can try to figure out what's truth and what's not. Based on what I've heard, I think it's like 80% truth or something like that with everything from Band of Brothers. But we'll never know. Until someone invents a time machine that we can go back and actually watch what happened. And that's probably not happening
Absolutely.
in the near future. Right. And so now we're back with Lifton still walking around the camp. You see that he's smoking, so he's taken it up pretty quickly, that this new vice for himself. And we're back to narration. And he goes, "The night before the attack, I did something as first sergeant I would never have imagined myself doing." And you see that he walks up to Winters, and Winters goes, "Lip, didn't figure you for a smoking man." And Lip says, "Neither did I." Which is a great line, because again, this is something that this man slash character is beginning, but it's gonna last him for quite a long time. And then he enters the CP with Winters, as they're trying to figure out what they need to do here. And then Winters gives something to one of his men there, and he goes, "D Company, Lieutenant Spears, patrol order." And then Lip goes, "So, we've been watching Foy all day, sir. Not much activity." And Winters is making a coffee here. And he says, "Want a coffee?" And he goes, "No, thank you, sir." Winters then says to him, "How's easy status?" "The men are good, sir. They're prepared. I'm going to be leading second platoon tomorrow. They're probably the weakest after losing Toy and Garnier and Muck and Pinkala. But all in all, I have every confidence in the men, sir." Winters looks at him and says, "Good. But on the other hand, I have no confidence in our CO, sir. Lieutenant Dyke is an empty uniform, Captain. He's not there, sir." "Well, he's going to be there tomorrow." And then Lip responds and goes, "Yes, sir. I understand he will be there physically, but tomorrow's going to be the real deal. And he's going to have to lead those men. He's going to have to make decisions, sir. And I got to tell you, sir, I think he's going to get a lot of easy company men killed." And Winters looks at him and goes, "Thank you, Sergeant. That'll be all. Yes, sir." Now, I mean, this is a great scene from the perspective that, Lifton really is doing something that you don't do because of the idea of chain of command. And as much as Winters probably appreciated getting this information, he probably knew it already himself and knew that there's nothing that he can do about it. And to be hearing something like this from a man who he trusts, who's a subordinate, he didn't want to get into a conversation with him that's going to in some ways impinge himself, or even let everyone know that what Winters really thought, because he's not supposed to let anyone know what he
Yeah.
thinks here.
No.
It
No.
goes.
I think this is excellent leadership on both as well. From, Lipton's courage of approaching this situation, because it's sort of that, I suppose, there is a chain of command, you're right. And he's the company first sergeant. Yeah, he should always report one up, but he's obviously got one around because he knows Winters, because Winter, he used to be the company commander. So it's that familiarity. So I'm sure in reality, or if, the role of Winters was somebody different, he would have gone to somewhere else, to another position to highlight the issue with Dyke. But to do that, it actually takes courage as well. Like, that's some really good leadership qualities right there to say, I don't have faith in this guy. And I wish even in the modern military, people would do this, but they don't. They just put up with it because they're a higher rank or two ranks up, where, they probably are a cluster of people. They are what we call a cluster
You can say
FUCK.
cluster. It's okay.
Cluster fuck. It could, absolute cluster fuck. But because of they're the boss, well, we have to do what the boss says. But even though, you're in a position to A, address that with the person and just say, I don't think you're right, or you need to do this. Or even go around, they won't do it and they just allow it to happen. And I think then that sort of creates or manifests some really bad,
Yes.
faith in your leadership, you could say, where he's trying to address it. So he, feel like he's trying to address the situation with Dyke by, hey, can you do something about this? Because lives depend on this decision, now, if this wasn't a battlefield, would he do, would he do the same? Well, I like to think so, because he did it with Sobel back in Aulbonne, prior to D-Day again. So again, they're building up to D-Day again. So they've done it before, and I think they did it as a group there, but he's doing it by himself. And I think that takes courage. And that, again, yeah, good leadership qualities. And again, on the flip side, Winters is listening. He's probably very well aware of this, but he's probably thinking, my hands are tied right now. I can't do anything unless I see it myself. Which is obviously, I don't want to sort of jump ahead a little bit, but like what you just said then, he's, even though he's got probably a very good relationship with Lipton, he's got to keep his cards close to his chest. He can't say, yeah, I agree with you, or this, that, and the other. He's, thank you for telling me, thank you for notifying me, thank you for informing me. He's going to be there tomorrow, sadly, and we'll go from there type
It's
thing.
somewhat of a
So,
callback
yeah.
to Saving Private Ryan when they're having the conversation, where Miller eventually just says, "Look, grapes go up. I don't grape to you. If I want a grape, I'm going to grape to the person above me."
Yeah.
That type of thing. So Winters is in that same position.
Yeah.
He's not going to
Yeah.
grape back to these men, and if he has a problem, he's going to
Can't.
grape up.
No.
Which again, we will see either later today or tomorrow how that actually works. So.
So I think if you gripe down, he's going to see that. And then when he's talking to people of his, his peers, or even his one rank down, they'll go,
That's
well,
right.
where do you hear that? Well, he told me. Oh, right. So then that could
Exactly.
fester down. Do you know what I mean? Well, if he thinks this, it could massive morale problem. So what you just said in re reference back to, Captain Miller, gripes up, go up, don't go down, because that's where problems, I think that's where it could, they can go sideways to fellow peers or up, so yeah. That's a really good way of looking at it, Rob. Really, really good way. I never thought of it like that with the reference
And
to
again, because it
Saving
makes
Private
so much
Ryan.
sense here, and it's even more apparent here than it was in Saving Private Ryan from that perspective, because here we know,
Yeah,
back then they were
definitely.
talking about, okay, the whole mission is FUBAR. That was the whole idea in Saving Private Ryan, and Miller's basically saying, well, this is my mission, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to gripe to you. I'm going to gripe if I want someone above me. But here Winters is being informed about something that he probably already knows, but doesn't have any—he doesn't have any control. I mean, we have the whole conversation of him trying to figure out, who could theoretically take over for Dyke, and he doesn't have any options. The best option was Buck, and Buck's not there. That type of thing. And then Lipton, walks out, and we hear the narration again. He goes, "I said what I had to say. There was nothing Winters could do." So again, he's sort of taking Winters off the hook here, knowing that, okay, I spoke my mind. Winters couldn't do anything, so he just left it as is. That type of thing. Or as far as Lipton's concerned, because he doesn't necessarily know what Winters is gonna, what Winters can do or will do. He might talk to Nixon, or he might talk to someone else to try to Winters might talk to Nixon to try and figure something out. But we'll never know. We'll never know. And then this there's a big fade out, and then we're back, and we get a long shot of the town of Foy. And we see, they give us a great panning shot showing us, first of all, the distance from the edge of the forest to Foy itself, where the Americans are, and then we see Winters is looking at he's talking with Dyke, and Lipton continues his narration here, and he goes, "You couldn't very well remove a company CO, especially a well-connected one, because of the misgivings of a company first sergeant." And then we then can hear Winters talking to Dyke, and he goes, "You've got about an eighth of a mile of open field across before we get down here into Foy. There's a little cover. You got to move quickly. I've set up two sections of light machine guns at either end. They'll give you covering fire. Third Battalion will come in from the east, led by I Company. That should cause a distraction. E Company will be in reserve, but we shouldn't need them. You're going to move in there fast. Get in there before they can bring their mortars and artillery down on you. Clear?" Dyke looks at him and goes, "Clear." He goes, "I'm relying on you. Get it done." And we see that Dyke like yawns as he's telling him that, which again, this goes back to what Graham said, that they needed to portray Dyke in the worst possible way possible. There wasn't really much they can do there.
I know the awning thing, it's quite a peculiar thing, isn't it, to do, like what was the purpose of the awning?
No,
Did
I
he
don't
talk
recall
about
that he
that at all,
mentioned
or like why the awning? I mean, it's maybe it's something that they were trying to show the battle fatigue. It's a set, I don't know. I don't know. It's quite
that. I mean,
an
again,
interesting
I think
thing,
that they're
isn't
trying
it?
to show that Dyke isn't really paying attention. I think that's what it comes down to. That you think, okay, yeah, sure, of course, yeah, and then Winters gets up, and he just yawns about the whole thing. So I don't know. It's hard to tell specifically the reason for it. Now, what I love
Definitely,
about this is the fact that they first showed us the panning shot, so that, and then he mentions that it's about an eighth of a mile, that type of thing. Just to, now we get an idea in our heads, what is an eighth of a mile? What is the area that they need to get across in order for this to be done properly, that type of thing. And then they start the assault, and again, amazing camera movement, because the camera shakes back and forth as the men are running across. We see Lipton running with them. We hear gunshots, and someone screams, "Covering fire! Let's go! Keep it moving! Suppressing fire!" And we see one of the guys get shot as they're moving. "Keep moving, move, move." And then we see some of the Germans shooting at them. And then Lipton starts giving a little more encouragement. And he goes, let's go, suppressing fire, fire. Keep them tight, James." And he goes, keep moving, come on." Again, it's great the way that they portray this battle scene, because these men are just running through an open field. It might only be an eighth of a mile, but that's still a problem, And then Liebgott shouts at them and says, "Crap's in the open, keep moving, keep moving." And he Liebgott sees that there's a bunch of Germans close by, and he goes, "Three inside." And then Dyke is, as he's running, just seems to be getting very confused as to what's going on here, which is a problem too. You don't necessarily want your commander to be that confused as things are moving. And the three Germans that Levi is talking about run into a building, right nearby there. And then they show Dyke just looking around back and forth, trying to figure out what's going on. And he goes, wait a minute, where's Foley? And then he screams to Bull and he goes, Randleman, leave God. And then Dyke goes, where the hell is First Platoon? And he then he screams, hold up. And like he stops everyone right in the middle of where they are. And this is the right, they're still out in the open. It's a really, really dangerous place. And Luz just looks at Dyke and just does not believe that he stopped in the middle of an open field. And then we see Lipton get really upset and start screaming, keep moving, keep moving. And Dyke screams to everyone, easy company, hold up. And everyone is just completely confused as to why he's stopping everyone. Lipton obviously takes the order and tells everybody, they need to try to keep some sort of semblance as to what they're going on here. And Lipton takes a knee. Again, right in the middle of the field. And at that point, that's where this 5-minute segment ends, where we don't even know what's going to happen with the fact that these men are all now right out in the open. And it seems as if the prophecy, I guess you can say, of Lipton from earlier is probably going to be coming true, because Dyke is just doing something really, really stupid here.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. It's I'm sure, the heat of the battle can be confusing as there is, and that's why you obviously got orders, directions, what your objectives are, where you need to be, where you need to go. And obviously it's what is it's showing is that clearly going back to what you said earlier with the yawning, after Winters has told him what's the plan, that he hasn't listened. And he has no idea what's going on. It's like he's zoned out. Like he's just, yep, nodding, nodding. Because like he says, when somebody's talking to you, especially when they're asking you to do something, you kind of want to like reconfirm what they've just said. So you want me to do this, this, this. Yes, that's exactly it. Or no, I want you to go there, here. Or you sort of want to like confirm everything that they've just said to you. So there's an understanding of you know your job. I've told you your job, and you're telling me what your job is, And I'm confident that you can pull this off. Obviously, and then sorry, and with the yawning, again, it's showing that yeah, it's you finished talking. Thanks very
Exactly.
much.
I'll take it
And
under
then
advisement.
now, yeah. And now the battle, the battle has started, the advance has started, and it's clear that he hasn't listened. He hasn't paid attention to anything Winters has said, or told him, what to do. I keep moving, get across there fast, and just yeah, and because of this is what could happen, men could die, and it's like what you just said. It's I think it obviously adds to that story of Dyke being made to look really bad, and. Well, Lipton knows what he's got to do because he's the company first sergeant. He's part of that. He needs, he's part of that command structure where, yeah, the company commander, the platoon commanders, they all need to know what's going on, what the plan is. Because it can't just be the company commander, because at the end of the day, when they're planning this and the company commander's telling them what needs to be done, they've got to sort of, hey, what about this? But they give no doubt probably give their own intake of how they're going to do it, so they can feed that back to their own men. But it's clear that yeah, Dyke just hasn't got a clue. And like I say, he stops in the middle of the field. And obviously Winter's like, what the hell are you doing stopping? Because Dyke is trying to gauge, like he's just freaked out a little bit because he's probably realized should have paid attention. No, and he hasn't, and I think this is obviously I don't want to creep into the next episode, but this is where Winters now is seeing he now has that evidence to go on top of what Lipton has told him earlier in the in this in, you know in the scene and go right, but it's probably the situation he doesn't want to be doing that change, but he's got to because more people will get hurt or killed. So yeah, it's. it's a really interesting
Yes.
lesson on leadership, you could say, as
100%.
well.
And again, we'll get more into it tomorrow when we continue to talk about that type of thing, because there's a lot that's going to happen tomorrow that will be changing the way anyone looks at these type of things.
Definitely, mate. No, absolutely.
All right. Excellent.
Absolutely.
So today's segment is we will be playing the well sort of we're gonna be doing World War II movie trivia. How's that? We're gonna see if Light knows anything about more World War II movies besides Band of Brothers. I hope you do. I hope you
Of
do.
course. I'll try with one.
It's meant in a good way, not in a bad way.
I know a couple, yeah.
Don't take that the
No,
wrong
I
way.
don't.
I want you to do well.
Too late. Too late, I'm offended.
All right. Excellent. So now let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Around and around and around the wheel. You're going to get five of these questions. We'll see what you get. Okay. In the 2016 movie Anthropoid, are you familiar with that movie? Operation Anthropoid?
I am. I've never watched it. That's another one I haven't watched.
Okay.
It's on my list. It is on my list.
Who is the who is the German high-ranking official that
Yep.
that they want to assassinate?
Obviously, it's quite a big piece of German history, isn't it? Oh gosh, you got me now. Two seconds. I know it's tip of my tongue. It is the tip of my tongue. I'm just trying to work my head now who that German is. It's oh I can't. I know it. I do know it. Heydrich.
Very good. Reinhard Heydrich, the main architect behind the Final Solution and the Reich's third in command. Very nice. Nicely done. All right, let's spin the wheel for your next question. Round and round and around the world. Okay, in the movie The Bridge on the River Kwai, who is the leader of the mission in order for them to go and blow up the bridge? You can either give me the name of the actor or the character.
Alec Guinness. Sorry, it's been a while since I've watched it. Is it?
No, Alec Guinness is the he's Colonel Nicholson who's in the camp. He's not one who wants to blow up the bridge.
Do you know, other than say, is it Jack Hawkins? I'm pretty. It's been a while since I've watched this film.
Okay, well, first of all, you're right. It is Jack Hawkins. There you go. Jack Hawkins plays Major Warden. He's the one in charge of it. So there you got that one. Very nice. All right, let's spin the wheel for your next question. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay, in the movie The Great Escape, all right, who plays the manufacturer?
Oh, the manufacturer, which, oh God, I'm sure I saw him in, is he in 633 Squadron as well? The little, does he become blind?
No.
No. The
No,
manufacturer.
that's the forger.
Forger,
You're
is it?
thinking of Donald Pleasence, the forger, right?
Where's the,
So the manufacturer's character name is Sedgwick. Does that help?
Oh, right, James Coburn. Yeah. Do you know what? It's,
Exactly. There you go.
yeah, it's,
There
again, another one I
you
haven't watched. A great movie. And yeah, with Donald
You've
Pleasance.
never seen The Great Escape?
Say again, sorry.
Oh,
I've seen
you
it.
should see it.
It's
You've
been
never seen?
a few years. I love this movie.
Ah.
I love it. Absolutely love this movie. It's just, yeah, I was just trying to think who's who in it.
Okay. All right. You're very good. Nicely done. All right. Let's move on to our fourth question. Round and round the wheel goes. And you get another question from The Great Escape. Angus Lenny, who plays the mole Ives, how does his character die?
Plane crash, isn't it? With
The mole. The mole. He's the guy who tries to dig out of the place
is it a plane crash as
with
they get
Steve
on, they get
McQueen.
shot?
No.
No.
No, again, you're going back to
But
Donald Pleasance. Donald
oh
Pleasance is the one who gets shot after the
oh
plane
no,
crash.
yeah,
This is the
you're right,
mole.
yeah, the mole.
He's a Scottish, the Scottish character.
Scottish character, yeah. Who's in 633 Squadron? I don't know. I think it's a get you get oh, I'm sure he gets shot in the back or something. Honestly, he gets shot in the back.
Sort of. He gets shot as he's trying to climb the fence when he
Yes, that
finds
is
out
it,
that
that is it.
they
Yeah,
found Eric.
that is it. I remember that, yeah.
There you
I
go.
can just about picture
Okay.
it.
Okay. Right. Okay. You get half a credit point for
That's right, yeah. I can
that
just about picture that now.
Yeah. All right. Now let's spin the wheel for your last question. See, it's not that bad. You thought it would be much worse. And you actually get another question from Visitor Required. Okay. In the movie The Bridge on the River Kwai from 1957, do you know how many Oscars it won?
Seven.
And you would be correct. It won seven. That's really good. It won seven of its eight Oscars. It
That's a good
lost only one
that's a
Oscar.
good turnout that. I mean,
Well, it's an amazing movie.
yeah, absolutely. From Best Picture. It sort of reminds me a little bit like sorry. Yeah, best was that Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor, Best Director, Best Writing. Where else? Best
Right,
didn't fall
supporting
through.
actor is the only one that didn't win.
Oh, sorry. Well, Best Supporting Actor, sorry.
Tsuyu Hayakawa was
Oh, nominee. Yeah,
right.
you're right.
Supporting actor
Nominee,
is the only
sorry.
one.
Nominee, sorry. And if I remember, you'll have to excuse me. So it's is it so there's another film like How Green Is My Valley, 1941. I think it was John Ford who directed it. Let me just double check. Yeah, John Ford, who directed the
Who directed
movie.
How Green Was My Valley? Yeah.
And the reason they didn't film that in Wales is because of the threat of the Blitz at the time. It should have been, I think William Wyler was originally down to direct it, and it was actually filmed in California. Because obviously it's far, far away from the UK. Because yeah, we were certainly, the southwest, was under constant threat of German bombing. And that did very well at the, oh, that's a five. That won five Oscars. So yeah, that's for me. Trying to sort of the comparisons. I thought it was more Oscars. That's where I was going with this one.
Oh, but you were perfect. You got seven of eight.
Yeah,
That's
and I think it's
you
just
got the right answer. See, Layton, you got 4.5 out of 5 of those. So that's pretty good. I'm very impressed. For somebody who isn't that much of a movie
love
fan. So
movies. I love
that's great.
movies. I'm a big movie fan.
No, but you told me, but you say you haven't seen a whole bunch of these in a long
I
time.
know
So.
it's yeah, it's weird. It's trying to pick which one you want to watch sometimes. And I watched 633 Squadron for the
Trust
first
me,
time
I'm
in
familiar.
many years a few days ago. And then I watched The War Lover a few weeks before, with Steve McQueen. And there's another one who was not, but it sort of like felt like it was the RAF version of 12 O'Clock High. I think it was just filmed after the war finished. I can't remember the name of the death, what was it called? But that was incredible, it was black and white. It was very late 40s, honestly, or mid 40s, and it felt like it was the British version of 12 O'Clock High. And it
Right.
was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And I hadn't seen that one before, and I can't remember the name of it. And if any of your listeners do, it'd be amazing. I'll have to dig it out because I did send it to someone, the name of it. But no, it's yeah, it's I think so, the Big Red one. I think it's hard to find to watch unless you have to pay for it. It's not on any of the streaming services that I can. Sorry,
No,
it's
I
really
understand.
hard to find. I haven't got a DVD player at the moment, so I need to get one and then buy that. Yeah.
Fair enough. All right, so now we will play the daily game of name that World War II movie. And so let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay, this is a movie from 2016, and it's all about a group of partisans that decide that they're going to try and assassinate Reinhard Heydrich. Any idea what movie this
We spoke anthropoid.
is? That's right. You see, this really happens. It truly was random. And there you right. Excellent. So, Leighton, would you like to tell people where they can find you besides in your house, like you were on Friday?
No, it's yeah, we happy few we happy few Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Yeah, like I says on the last one, just kind of currently, there's some old podcasts that, with the old team, with Matthew Leach and Doug Allen on the podcast. But sort of going in my own direction now and sort of speaking to, historians regarding local history, sort of trying to build that up. The Great Escape is one I want to look into plan and get locked in. They had a personal issue recently, so we had to postpone it. But the German Great Escape in the UK.
Well, as I'm sure you know, you should obviously talk to Patty about that.
Well, no, the German Great Escape, the actual German Great Escape, but Paddy'd be great. I mean,
Oh,
Paddy'd be
German
a
great.
phenomenal, I'd love to chat more about Paddy, about that, about his with the actual, the Great Escape that everyone knows about. But no, yeah, Instagram, Facebook. I don't really use Twitter, not really use I don't use it. It is, yeah, we have few 506.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram, find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So, Leighton, thank you very much once again for joining me. And I hope you still want to come back tomorrow to continue talking about what happens in Hawaii.
Oh, definitely, mate, definitely.
All right, excellent. So, until tomorrow, Curry!
Curry.